Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, throughout the 90s, Andy Sorensen was one busy man, along with people like Steve Grace, Adrian Ross, Kathy Johnston, and just a couple of others. He was one of the most in-demand Christian artists in Australia, with more gigs each year than there are basically days on the calendar. Then he kind of slipped away from the live music scene. There were a number of reasons behind that, but one particular serious one is what you're going to find out about tonight. Andy Sorensen is back, though, and he's with us tonight. Would you please welcome Andy Sorensen? Now, Andy, it's very interesting. We're going to talk about your history in just a second, but you're sitting by this contraption. Do you just want to tell us, do you have a name for it? Has it got a name?
Not really, not yet. I think the closest thing that someone's come up with is the eclectic piano.
The eclectic piano.
Yeah.
How do you describe it to the audience?
I have no idea.
it's got a few buttons.
It's a weighted piano keyboard, because piano is my main instrument. And I guess because I've done a lot of stuff in the studio for the last years, I have a little loop station here, which means that I can kind of do recording on the fly. So
yeah.
The whole idea is to kind of build up a little performance and, you know, make a bit of a larger sound than me just singing and playing piano.
So and you can do that all live. It's not. You don't
well,
have to
I hope so. We'll find
record.
Out in a minute.
Well, give us a try.
Okay.
Show
so
us.
This is just a little bit of a demo that Sheridan asked, because I know he's been spinning his vinyl at home and getting these cassette tapes, which is exactly what I was doing in the same year.
The Malcolm McLaren album.
I was
Albert,
the only
buddy.
One in the audience singing along to that song.
Did you know that? Did you have the album?
Yeah, not the album, no, but I knew the singer.
The cassette?
But we're just having a conversation. No, I didn't have the cassette, mate. So what I'm going to do here is just... what I normally do is set this little recorder up. I play a little synthesizer loop, or I play this little drum machine over here for this song. I'm just going to do a little one-minute demo and then sing and build up harmonies. But it's all kind of happening as we speak, and there's a few little programmed loops in there as well.
Do it,
so
buddy.
Hopefully after that big introduction, it's I can
work.
Get my act together.
Amazing. That was utterly amazing. We're going to hear a little bit more, actually, from Andy Sorensen when he does his song. Come over here.
Did you pick up the lyrics?
We did. Yeah, but that modern rock music, I never know what you guys are singing. Come on, sit down. That was really fascinating. I'm so looking forward to the song he's going to do for us afterwards. Absolutely amazing. Now, I remember when I first got into Christian radio, I started at this tin pot little aspirant Christian radio station in Brisbane. It's now a powerhouse of a station, but at the time it didn't even have a license. And we were playing this guy named Andy Sorensen. I remember the one particular single was Living the Mystery. And you're in your rocking best back in the early, I think, 92, 93. He's doing all these rock and roll salutes and things. If only the 100,000 people listening could see you now. If only they could. That Burning Feet album was really quite significant for you, wasn't it? I mean, it was huge in terms of Australian Christian music.
That was huge for me because it's the first thing I did out of high school. So, yeah, I was just like you. I was in my bedroom playing with tape machines and record players, and yeah, I was actually exposed to the studio by my music teacher in year seven. So I walked into a professional studio, and for me, that was it. And
that was it.
And I just knew what I wanted to do. And from about 17 or 18, I started making that record under my own steam, really. Recorded it at home mostly with the help of a friend, John Boshua, who used to do sound for AC/DC.
Okay. And you were pretty ambitious, actually, as a 17 or 18-year-old, because didn't you jump on a plane and head over to the States and knock on some doors and say, hey, sign me?
Yeah, I turned up with my long hair and my torn jeans in Los Angeles at Atlantic Records and say, I'm here.
I've arrived.
What are you going to do about it? Yeah. And they very graciously actually sat me down and listened to the record, which they didn't have to do. And out of that, I ended up coming home. They gave me some advice, and I ended up getting a record deal at home in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
That was the start. That was Burning Feet, so.
What was one biggest kind of memory of those gigging days throughout the 90s? Because like you said, I mean, you were having so many gigs that there weren't even enough days on the calendar. You were doubling up and everything. It was very, very busy.
Well, it was a guy's dream. I come from a town called Narbathong, which was less than 200 people in sort of northeastern Victoria, which got burnt down to the ground by the fires 2 years ago. So I was just determined to take my piano playing away from the cows that would come to the window when I learned, and actually take it to an audience bigger than that. So I was pretty happy with anything. Yeah.
From that, for a guy who then jumps on a plane and goes over to LA and knocks on a few doors and say, hey, I've arrived.
Oh, the confidence of youth.
The confidence of country youth.
I don't know whether I should be sitting here or lying down, Sheridan.
Yes.
On the couch here.
Tell us about your childhood. Yeah. Tell us about your childhood. So you were gigging, mm-hmm. and then you kind of drew back.
Yeah.
There was a number of reasons. We're going to get to kind of a very significant reason in a minute. But one reason was actually because you were getting so many approaches saying, will you produce my album?
Yeah, that record, that Burning Feet record we made on a little 8-track recorder, we really didn't know what we were doing other than a bedroom experiment. But we had pretty high expectations of ourselves, and we spent 3 years making it. And I guess when it came out, people started ringing me. I thought I was going to be this massive rock star, which to my mother I am, so it's all right. But people started ringing up and saying, oh, can you come and produce my record? This record sounds good. We thought it was American. I don't know what to think about that. But that was kind of an easy thing for me to slide into. And I did a lot of performances in the first, 5 years, toured fairly extensively. And but after that, invitations for production came along, and I really found I was of more use in the studio, sitting behind the speakers, and which I love doing, and I'm still doing to this day. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Around about that time, you were late 20s. Other things started to happen for you as well. Just describe the effects, and then we'll start talking about the cause. But just describe the effects of what started to happen for you around about 28, 27 or so.
Yeah, I guess that was that coincided with I grew up. When I finished my time at Narbathong and jumped on a plane, I moved down to Melbourne and became very heavily entrenched in the, my music comrade buddies scene in Melbourne, who we were all making a lot of records for a lot of people. And that time you're talking about, my late 20s coincided with me coming up to the Central Coast, north of Sydney. And, I actually kind of lost all, not my desire, but I just got really scared about playing songs and singing. And, there's some things going on in my life that I wasn't very, it's hard for me to talk about, actually. But I kind of stopped performing, basically. Yeah.
Tell as much as you want.
Yeah.
But there were flashbacks involved around about that time?
Yeah, when I was maybe 27 or 28, I'm not quite sure, which is however many years ago now. I started getting these memories of stuff that would happen to me when I was a very young boy, so probably 13, 14, 15 for 3 years. And memories are such that I think it was shut down. From when I was about 18 years old, I think, to my late 20s, if you had have told me that the experiences that happened to me back then had happened, I wouldn't have even known, because it was just not part of my world. So 27, 28, I started getting these flashbacks of some stuff that was going on, which basically, I've only just started talking about it, and but it's a necessity that I do due to some other things that have happened in my life. I was serially sexually abused for 2 or 3 years. Is the reason I've kind of trying to get out and start playing and singing again. because I feel like I need to be telling my story, as uncomfortable as it is.
And it's taken a few years for you to get to that stage.
Yeah, it has.
So it was happening to you in what context?
In the context of my parents are incredible people, and didn't happen to me within my family. My family are heavily involved in the church and leaders in the church as elders. And so it happened to me. How do we say this? I guess it happened to me with leaders of the church a long time ago. Yeah.
And you didn't really realise that it was wrong at the time?
I didn't realise. I think for people that go through that, I haven't really thought much about it, but it's a horrible thing that happened, and it happens to a lot of people. And I think the biggest thing and the hardest thing for me even now, I think all these years later, I think is just that sense of shame that happens. So you're not really thinking about who, why, when or where, but you just want it to go away.
And so you kind of were stuffing it away, and then it was coming back in your later 20s.
Yeah, I didn't intentionally stuff it away. It was mercy, I think. Just shove it up until I could emotionally probably deal with it, I think. I told you I should be lying down. How's everybody going? It's a fun night.
And then last year something happened that kind of, because from what I understand, family didn't really know that this had happened to you.
No. I was trying to protect my family from it because they've been through some, families go through things, and I really thought that I would take this stuff to the grave on my own. It was just this big, dark, horrible thing in the closet for me, and I just thought it wasn't of benefit to anybody, to know about it. And I've been asked on a number of times, on a number of occasions, to give songwriting workshops and musical things, and I found myself coming to the realization. I've always been able to play as a very young guy. I've been able to play and sing. And I came to the realization last year, talking to a group of people about songwriting, that I wanted to call it Songwriting Saved Andy Sorensen's Life. They were all songwriters. Could it save yours? And I came to the realization that maybe I was given the ability to write and sing to get through this horrible time that happened to me in my early teens. And whether that's the truth or not, I'm hanging on to that because I've got a lot of friends that haven't been able to get through it. And so I'm very grateful, because that's always been, music's been my language and the conduit to God, and I think he's been very merciful to me. And so that's the reason why I really need to kind of start singing about it.
So you're back.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, back, but yeah, I had, let me just finish that story by saying that some friends of mine, we all lost a friend last year who took their own life, and it turns out that a similar story had happened to my friend, and unbeknownst to me, they had a similar experience to me, and I wasn't able to talk to that person about that, and now they're gone. And so I guess that was a bit of a catalyst. I go, oh, well, I can't shut up about this anymore. So I think the difference is I've been given an opportunity, and I've survived it, and there are a lot of people who this has happened to. I mean, the statistics are overwhelming. And it's happening in the church, it's happening in the community, it's happening every walk of life. And I think we just, I need to be able to tell people about it. Because for me, the most important thing is with my faith is just one foot in front of the next. That's as technical as my faith gets, mate.
And that's actually sometimes all we need, isn't it?
Yeah. I need to read your book and learn a bit more stuff.
I've got some great ones down here. The Philosophical Foundations of the Christian Worldview is particularly classic.
Excellent.
It's a particularly good one. A couple of things before we go to a break, and then I want to hear your song that has come out of this experience. Mm-hmm. The Perpetrator?
Perpetrator, this is a good news story for me, I guess, because I'm not sure how far my Christianity runs when we're talking about people and they're messing with children, but from very early on, probably not so many years after my experience, the perpetrator's out of the picture and had passed away.
Okay.
And for me, that's actually been a great thing, not having that there to be able to deal
with.
Another thing that I need to mention, is in my capacity as telling these people this little story about songwriting, I didn't go into all of this, but I'm just saying that was my conduit to get through that whole thing. But I hadn't been able to tell my family, and I felt it wasn't right to be able to tell a group of people and then not tell the people close to me. So that was really tough. And my parents were just very gracious about it. And look, ever since I started mentioning it, besides the fact that the pain of of what happened is real, and it's hard for me. It's just a non-issue for me now that I've spoken about it. So that would be the biggest thing that I would want to tell people who have had that experience. It's gone. Mm. I just spoke about it, and something that's held me captive for 20 years, that's not a big deal. Hmm. So anyway, that's my pretty little story.
Okay. Well, you've written a song, which we're about to hear in just a second. It's called Very Bright Future, which I think is aptly titled. And he's going to be using that thing again. And we're going to hear that thing play his song in just a second. Don't go away. This is Open House right across the nation. Well, after listening to that story and after hearing him play that thing, whatever it is, are you ready for Andy Sorensen?
And I'm gonna do the best with one. tunes from the main.
Andy Sorensen. Gosh. Now that might just get a tear out of my eye. Fabulous work, mate.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.